Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show. Want to take a quick second to interrupt the episode and let you guys know that we are partnered with Louis Wickett of Key Mortgage Group. Guys, I don't know anything. I mean, I don't know anything about buying a home. All right, I've never done it. I'm 25 years old and you need someone who's going to educate you on the process. Okay. Louis literally helped Kevin just buy a home. Kevin just purchased a home in Iowa City. He used this is a real relationship. This isn't just some phony, like read an ad, get paid type of thing. Louis is seriously helpful. He helped Kevin. He can help you. Let me read a couple reviews of Louis. Jacob said, as a realtor, it is important to me to be able to have a relationship with lenders that are honest, hardworking, and trustworthy. Louis went above and beyond for my clients, myself, and the new homeowners. Couldn't be happier with the way he educated them throughout the process and the way it made it simplistic. I highly recommend Louis to anyone looking for a mortgage lender. That's just one. Chris said, working with Louis was nothing but a positive experience. He went out of his way to introduce himself to me on a holiday weekend, knowing that I was only in town for a short time. He made the whole loan process effortless on our part. I would definitely recommend him to anyone. Now, doesn't that sound like some guy that you would want to work with? All right, some guy that we recommend, that we have talked to, that we know is going to help you get the process done. And like I said before in these ads, I'm pretty sure that mortgage rates are at an all-time low. So if you're in that process right now or you need some help, you need some information, contact Louis. Again, we've set up a private email just for our listeners of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Contact him at hawks@gohomeside.com, or you can just search Louis Wickett and find him online. Now back to the show. Episode 142 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Today we are joined by former UNI Panther Carter Schultz. On a day where we should be discussing a game result of the Panthers and Hawkeyes, Carter's going to tell us a little bit about his journey to Cedar Falls and beyond and where football has taken him and now what he's doing with his life. Hope you guys enjoy this one. It was fun to record. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Walk-Ons fans, episode 142 of the podcast, and today we're back at it like we never left. I'm gonna act like I was never on a hiatus, and we're just Right back at it from episode 141. Today we have a pretty fun guest, a guy that I've known for a good while, pretty glad to have become friends with, a guy that has a great but also like bullshit football story at the same time. Great guy, funny, good human being, an opponent of ours at least once. I'm not exactly sure how many times, but the UNI's all-time leader in sacks. I know you set the record for the year. Did you set the career?
Second sacks, first tackles for loss, and a couple other ones in there. You know.
Those are his credentials. This is Carter Schultz. Welcome to the podcast, bud.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Drake, I don't think I've heard you say that many nice things about me in one sentence before, so I appreciate it.
Hey, I try and make everybody feel at home right when they start off, and then if things go downhill from there, at least we started on the right foot.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, the so that's a common like reaction to most Drake intros, because he just lays it all out there on the line, and then people are like, oh, I didn't know that I was in that good of grace with Drake. But yeah,
really, if you want Drake to say nice things about you, the only way you can get it done is to be a guest on the podcast.
You have to be a guest on the podcast. Yeah,
I was gonna say the only time I've hung out with him usually is with Griffin, and usually it's just profanity and you know, just
and listen, since you brought Griffin up forward. Since you brought Griffin up, I'm gonna take this opportunity to drag his ass, because Griffin happens to be one of my best friends from my hometown, and I've known him for however many years, too many unfortunately. He makes me dumber every time I talk to him, and today he was gonna come on the podcast because he was Carter's roommate and teammate at UNI, and he was my best friend, basically my roommate and teammate in Muscatine. We're gonna have a great dynamic, but I guess his pussy hurt today, and it wasn't his day. It might be that time of the month, whatever his issue is, but he couldn't join us today because he was scared.
Yeah, RIP, you know, wow. He's locked down, and don't know why he didn't come on. I think he's scared of you, Drake.
Welcome, Drake, back to the podcast, by the way. Welcome back. There was not a lot of that in the three episodes I did by myself, or
four episodes we actually had a respectable production.
We had a clean podcast. there was you know, a lot of direction. So let's talk
about Carter.
Let's talk a little bit about what we're doing here. So today we were supposed to be Monday, if you're listening to this when it comes out, you were supposed to be listening to us break down how the Hawks just beat you and I by like at least 14 to 20 points.
A million. Try that.
It could be a million, or it could be a walk-off field goal. We've done that, or we could block one of their field goals
or
twice if we had to.
really, it's just anything. We can do whatever we want. So we just sometimes we make it interesting
because
we blow them out.
Because really, we are Big Brother, their little brother, and then Iowa State is little sister, right? So that's
funny. I mean, I could not argue with that. You know, I
we need
much
you
as,
to argue with that. You as, have the floor.
As much as I hate that is being said, it's just true. Like, you know, like we can always push teams like Iowa. Like, we would push them to the brink, but we can't ever get over the top with them. But Iowa State, you know, we kind of just shit on them.
Tell us about it, Carter. Tell us about it.
Yeah. I mean, the two out of the 3 years that I played, I beat Iowa State. And I mean,
And how much did they pay you to go there?
And we got paid. I think it was 400,000 to 500,000 to go.
We got the bag.
You know.
So he just walked in,
Iowa, on
beat
the other
the
hand,
ass and took the bag.
We got paid to get our butts kicked. But at least mine was respectable. I wasn't there for the last 2 years ago or last year where they got absolutely stomped on. So that wasn't me. But.
Dude, I'll tell you what. The team in whatever year we played that David went off.
Yeah, that was the team. That was the team I was there.
That team took us to the brink. Like David Johnson.
That was a great game.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that man was.
We got David Johnson, who, you know, I think he's going to have a great year with the Texans this year.
He is, because I got him on my fantasy team, and I've been telling everybody that they're sleeping on the
I hope coast. He does, because I'm honestly mad how they did him in Arizona. Like,
same.
Kingsbury screwed him over. But
yeah.
We had Xavier Williams, who's still – he just won a Super Bowl ring with Kansas City. I mean, we had some legit guys on the team. So
that was a fun game, too.
I remember that. It was pretty back and forth. It was fun to watch guys like that who are now, because we've done it. I mean, I don't know how many top tier fantasy running backs we played in our time, but Saquon, Christian, David was up there.
Melvin Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, it was
ridiculous. Let's go,
yeah, wow.
It was ridiculous, and that was a fun game, I remember.
I don't really remember who the middle linebacker was, but I do just –
Quentin Alston.
He had himself a rough.
Got roasted. David was just – I mean, he just looked like a superhuman out there.
Yeah, those so are, I remember, like, we held him up pretty good in the run game, but you guys schemed it out very well that you had David Johnson one-on-one with Q. And
which is a bad matchup
I think David Johnson had over 200 yards of receiving that game.
Yeah, it was
bad. Man, it's not fair. He was running a pipe route, and David Johnson has shown that when he's healthy, he's one of the best receiving backs in the entire NFL. I mean, it was a mismatch.
Yeah,
one well, five at 230.
Our defense, it's like, oh. Okay, we may have had a flaw in our defense.
Whoops.
David Johnson had an effect for the rest of my time in the Hawkeyes. Like, hey, remember 2014 where we just got torched on this route? Keep an eye out for that.
Honestly, a good story from that is that was my redshirt freshman year, so it was my first time actually, like, it was the first game of the season, and I knew I was possibly going to play. I was playing on special teams. As punt shield, but absolute worst position there is in football.
Five, Carter. Yeah. We could have some great shield talk.
And then I got in sub on defense, and like I got in for like two plays, got absolutely gassed, and tapped my helmet to come back out because I was like so nervous to get in against. I think it was Sheriff.
Yeah, was still it would have been Sheriff. Like,
oh, holy shit. Nothing. And, you know, the crazy part is you'd think your coach would have your back. Like, the night before, we're in the meeting room, right? And it's his highlight tape playing over and over. And, like, he's trying to get in our mind that if we don't take it seriously, he's going to just absolutely shove us in the ground. And, like, it didn't help us at all in the defensive room. We're just like, oh, okay, thanks for hyping us up. I mean,
hey.
We made this guy out to be a demigod.
I had a similar experience because when we were about to play Ohio State in 2017, our offensive coordinator was also our running backs coach, and we had a great relationship with him. And he was like, listen, circles Nick Bosa. He's like, this guy, if he doesn't want to get blocked, our guys aren't blocking him. And so, like, he was just straight up like, if this guy decides he's going to show up for 70 plays – We're fucked.
Hey, some guys like that. Fortunately, he decided he wanted to headbutt Nate Stanley, and so he got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
So
smart.
The Bosa's got all of the physical genetics, but maybe not all the mental ones. I don't know about that one.
I was honestly surprised. I always kind of, you know, when I heard about Nick Bosa following Joey Bosa, I thought Joey would be the better one, but Nick he's unbelievable.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, Joey used to tell people that he had a little brother who was probably better, and they're like, no, he's not. And turns out he's possibly the best pass rusher
in
the league.
Insane. I didn't think he'd do so well as his rookie season, but
they're both insane. I mean, Joey just
imagine being the older brother getting drafted third overall, and then your little brother beats you and gets drafted second overall.
Yeah, he has a better rookie year than you've probably had in your whole career.
Yeah.
That's one of those situations, like, Thanksgiving's going to be interesting.
That's like, yeah, I mean, I sure have a little bit of bragging rights, but I think they're both probably, like, you know.
Who did you watch the most of?
Got paid.
Who did you watch the most of, Carter, to become a good pass rusher? Because you had a dominant couple seasons when you were starting, but you got, like, a smaller frame.
Yeah, well, when I was, you know, when I was really starting to hit my prime in that, that was when J.J. Watt was really big.
Hell yeah.
Like 2013, 14, 15. Like, he was insane.
Another genetically gifted family.
No Absolutely. And, but
also,
you know,
gifted with HGH.
Yeah.
He's massive. And so I thought, you know, I looked somewhat like him. I was a little bit smaller frame, but, you know, I fit the bill. I'm sure J.J. Watt coming out of college was labeled as a high motor guy who – you know, wasn't gifted athletically, you know what I'm saying?
Sneaky.
So I looked a lot after his film, and there's a couple other guys, but you know, my skill set was very power based until maybe a year and a half or two bouncing around in the league. Like, I turned a corner in terms of my speed and speed rushing and stuff like that. But in college, against FCS competition, I thought it was all that. And then I go back and watch my film, and I just ran people over. Like, I just long armed them into the quarterback and just took the quarterback down. And
hey, I mean,
it did work.
Are you not all that if you can just run through everybody? I mean,
it's true. And then I get to Cleveland for my first training camp, and I tried to do it to Joe Thomas, and it didn't work out.
And he was like,
to a Hall of Fame offense.
He pulled the Mutombo out. He's like,
Yeah, he just stood there like,
what the fuck
are
you doing, kid?
He probably literally thought that too. He's like, oh, this is cute. This guy's going to try and run me over.
That's pretty much his attitude. Like, he was very, like, jovial, and he was like, almost like a Santa Claus figure. Like, he just like laughed. He just like, oh, good try. Like, all right, I feel terrible about myself.
I'll tell you what, though. When you were in Cleveland, you were there for two camps, right?
Yeah.
And I want you to talk a little bit about, like, how cutthroat the NFL is, because I don't think people understand the business aspect of it. Because I watched you in the preseason in both those games. Like, we watched every time. We were excited to watch you play, and you played well, especially in the second camp, but like, things didn't work out. So just talk about it, because the NFL is just not a fair place.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually glad you said something, because this weekend was cut week, and there's a lot of people who actually, you know, like Iowa guys, everybody who's, you know, just got cut and they don't really know what's going on in the future. But basically, you know, as a rookie, you're pretty naive. You know, it's the glamour and the glitz of the NFL. Like, I walk into the locker room, and it was Myles Garrett was the first overall draft pick, and I'm in the same room with him and other guys. You know, Cleveland wasn't super star-studded at the time, but, you know, I got Hugh Jackson as the head coach and whatnot. So I'm kind of like, oh, this is going to be great. And it's not really until you probably get a little bit into it until you realize that. It is a business, you know, depending on who you are. For me, luckily, I was a highly touted undrafted free agent. So, like, I got a little bit of money. And so, like, they didn't treat me, like, really badly. But there's some guys, like, you know, they're just there. They're just there as bodies. And the organization is going to think, oh, we're doing this kid a favor for he gets to live out his dream. But, I mean, yes and no. You do get to be there, but you're pretty much the punching bag the entire time.
You're one of those guys who's like, in like 10 years, you're like, yeah, I played in the league.
Yeah, that guy. Like... And I mean, granted, they did the work. And I mean, but, you know, they have no real shot, which kind of stinks. But that is the nature of the business. You think about it when you start with a 90-man roster and you need to cut down to 53. There's a lot of hard decisions. And, you know, the thing is, you could have a really bad player who gets paid a lot, or they, you know, the organization doesn't want to look stupid. So, you know, for me personally, and in a couple of those camps, I outperformed some of the guys that were, you know, drafted that year with me, I think drafted in 6th, 7th round, but I wasn't kept around because I was an undrafted free agent. So technically they had less financially,
they had already put money equity into this player.
And yeah, like it was an easier cut. But my one example for how cutthroat it is, this is how much like businessy it is. We had a veteran DN who'd been with the Browns for 7 years. I kind of forget his name, but he was relatively established, had like 50 sacks in his career over 7 or 8 years, which is pretty good. And so he gets hurt the first like day or two of training camp. They're like, hey, yeah, like, we want to get you back. We'll rehab you. We want to see how you look in preseason, like, game 3 or 4. So he's rehabbing. He doesn't practice all camp. He gets back the week before game 4 in the preseason. They say, hey, we're clear you. We just need to see you practice, blah, blah, blah. And then or we will clear you. We'll see you practice, and then you'll get to play this weekend. So they clear him, practices, everything's fine, and then they cut him the same day.
Oof.
So they lied to him. They really knew they were going to cut him. But if they would have cut him while he was injured, he would have gotten paid injury pay. And so since they cleared him, they owed him nothing.
Gosh.
So they knew that the entire time in good faith, and they did that to him. And that was like a 7-year vet with the Browns. And I was like, wow. Once I found that out, I was like, I mean nothing to this.
These people literally don't give a fuck about you.
I don't care. They don't care about me.
It's so wild. You hear stories like that all the time. I think Hard Knocks is such an incredible production because they do give you a slight window into that world. And it's really, as a guy who, guys like us who were kind of in that world, you more obviously, you got to experience camps. Us three were 0-3 on trying to make an NFL camp. But we know plenty of people who have in like that kind of world and what it's like. Really, really good content on the Hard Knocks. And you said something, you said you outperformed a lot of the guys who were already being paid. And I feel like that happens so often, right? Like you hear, you know, we would have guys come back and train in the facility who were free agents. They were looking for a spot to land, or they had found a spot to land, but they were talking about the previous camp they were in. And they were like, yeah, I mean, I was probably the 4th or 5th best out of 7. They kept 7, but they were paying 2 other guys that were below me on the talent level. And so they cut me.
You got to think who makes the decisions on who gets cut. It's the GM. Who's the guy that drafted those guys? The GM. If he cuts the people that he drafts, he looks like an idiot. So,
yeah, if you think about it, there's so many voices going into it. Like,
it's crazy.
You see the coaches every day. So you think the feedback you're getting from your coaches is the only thing that matters. So, like, I was getting a lot of positive feedback. But there's scouts. There's the GM. There's the assistant GM. There's the owners. In the Browns' case, the owners are pretty hands-on. Head coach, defensive coordinator, you know, all those opinions are going in to the hat. And then at the end, the final say is going to be the GM, the one who, you know, he hasn't really – he watches practice and whatnot, but he's, you know, he's not with you every day and he's not in the meeting rooms, stuff like that. So it is tough. I mean, not just my situation, but it happens. Yeah. It happens all the time. And you know, it's a shame, but you don't want to look stupid. Like think about like Jamarcus Russell. They picked him 1 overall over many years ago. And they knew he was bad. They knew he was like lazy. But they weren't willing to just absolutely make themselves look so stupid. So they kept him for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I love the story about Jamarcus Russell where I think some of the coach gave him like the DVDs on like the blitz packages and like asked him to give a report on it the next day. And the next day he gives some bullshit answer. And he's like, those DVDs didn't even have anything on them.
Yeah, pretty much. That's terrible, bro.
Yeah,
and if being drafted 1 overall and getting a massive signing bonus doesn't motivate you to work hard, then I mean,
nothing will.
Why would you want to work hard, man? You already secured the bag.
I guess he's gonna plan on living off that for the rest of his life.
Unreal.
What else you got for us, Clover?
I was gonna say, let's just take it back quick. We want to bring people on each week. This is gonna be our goal. I'm not sure if we're going to smack it out of the park 100%, but we're going to try. Carter is week 1. So like I said, we were supposed to be talking about you and I, the game that happened yesterday, but obviously that's not happening. And so we want to bring on somebody from each of the schools that were on Iowa's original 2020 schedule. Drake's just so happened to have the connection with Carter. We have, you know, we have a few other connections that we can get guys from other schools. Next week we're going to try and do Iowa State. I don't even remember the original schedule at this point because it got moved to Big Ten and now it's not anything. So Carter, how did you find your way to UNI? What was that story like out of high school and what did that look like?
It was kind of a crazy story. My, you know, as I was growing up in high school, I went to a really small school. I played all 4 sports. So I really hadn't decided whether I wanted to play baseball or football, but
where'd you go?
Tripola, Iowa. It's like northeast of Cedar Falls.
I know where it's at.
Never heard of it. It's a town of about 1,500. So we were 1A or we were A. We were the lowest class for the longest time. And then midway through my high school career, we switched to 8-man. And so that, I think that made a huge difference to me. like I said, I didn't know if I wanted to play baseball or football, but by the time I was like a freshman or sophomore, I was already 6'2", like 230 pounds. So I was already pretty big.
Sheesh.
I kind of thought that it'd be an easier route for me to go football. And so I played my freshman year, but I didn't do amazing. Sophomore year, I kind of broke out. And junior year, once I got to eight man, I mean, I think I had like 140 tackles as a defensive end. And
that's so disgusting.
And not only that, like
140 tackles and like 50 touchdowns on offense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I moved around on offense. I played center, but I also played, like, Drake can appreciate this. I played fullback, and I was way bigger than everybody. So if I wanted to, I would just put my head down and get 10 yards every time I carried the ball.
See, I didn't have that problem when I played fullback. I was not bigger than everybody.
No, yeah, no. And I don't know how many times you got handed the ball either.
Not enough.
Probably too much, to be honest with you.
Yeah, wait, shit, look at my first down and touchdown ratio, dude. I'm a machine.
Okay, what'd you have to get, like 6 inches every time?
Hey, is a conversion better than a punt?
Hey, 6 inches. We can only expect six inches out of Drake. That's really about it.
At the most.
What I got. At the most.
Anyway.
Yeah, and then junior year started – hearing some things from smaller schools. You know, my brother was playing football at Co College. So I was starting to tour like D3 schools and like Iowa Western, some D2 schools like Wayne State and Northwest Missouri State and stuff like that. And then my junior year, like I said, we were really good. We went 11-2 overall and we made it to the Dome and I was playing fullback and we were playing this team that had some small linebackers and I was just absolutely mowing these linebackers over because we were kind of a power team. And so I just run power and I just mow the linebacker over. And so we ended up losing in the semifinals. And a couple of weeks later, that was my first contact with UNI. And they came to me and told me that they had their eye on me. They wanted me to come to camp. And so that summer going into my senior year, I went to camp at Iowa State and UNI. I remember coming to Iowa because I had some connections to get into the camp. And I met Kirk and whatnot. And I just, that was my first camp of the summer and I got shit on. There was just some massive human beings there.
Really?
And being from eight man, I'd never really experienced it yet. It was like my first jump in competition. I was like, holy, this dude is massive. Like, anyway. I mean, they were bringing in guys from, like, Illinois and, you know, all those different places.
Of course.
I got humbled at that one. And then I went to UNI. I did well. And so it kind of just rolled on from there. And then my, like, contact coach, who was the D-line coach, he says, hey, Coach Farley, the head coach, is coming in tomorrow to your school to see you. He's going to, like, give you a look over, basically, you know, and size you up. He's like, I would recommend you go in the morning, go lift for a couple hours and wear the tightest shirt that you can. I was like, all right, deal.
That's so the next funniest day, shit I've ever heard.
You always got to play the game, man. I remember on my recruiting trip, so yeah. I always wore the shoes with the big heels on them, make you look a couple inches taller.
I was so naive. I didn't know anything. And I didn't really know. I understood why he said it, but I was like, all right, sure, I'll do it. So that's what I did. And it was hilarious. I mean, he's looking me up and down like I'm like a piece of meat. And then the last thing he goes, he's like, all right, let me see how big your hand is. It's like, I'm lost at this one. I'm like, okay. And my hand is like, I'm got relatively small hands. And so they weren't that big. And he takes a step back, looks at me for a good 5-10 seconds and then leaves. And
then, okay. Hold up. I'm going to put a pin in this real quick. There's been some shitting on Farley on this podcast before. And the story you just told,
I can't imagine from who.
It doesn't push me in any other direction but to shit on him more. It just sounds like an asshole. I don't like the guy. I've never met him. I don't know anything about him. Fucking don't like him.
I can totally understand. I mean, if you're on the outside looking in, and even on the inside looking out, depending on
who I was about to say, I've heard some stories from the inside looking
in. Yeah, I mean, shitty human being, I would say no, but He is definitely a preferred taste. Like, the only reason I can say that I like him and I appreciate him is because of what happened to me. And that was because I turned out to be such a success story for him. Sure. You know, like, I'm homegrown Iowa boy who basically got almost, I had a partial scholarship to get to UNI, worked my way to become, you know, one of the record holders. And so, like, you know, he markets that like crazy. I mean, of course, hear about it all the time. But the first 2 years, I couldn't stand him. I mean, I hated him so much because I wasn't technically sound yet, but my effort was always there and everything that I did. And he just rode my ass. And no matter what I did, I could not please him. And it fueled my motivation because I hated him so much. But I can totally understand why anyone else who doesn't know him would say that, because he is very peculiar. I mean, he's an old school football coach set in his ways.
I'd love to punch him in the face and give him beef stew.
Yeah. Wow. I haven't seen him in a while. I think.
But let's be honest, Drake, that's not a short list to be on for you.
Not really.
He's one of a kind. So I don't think I would have, you know, I have a lot of former teammates that have bad opinions about him and stuff. So if you don't really do something for him in terms of, like, you know, work your way into the program and contribute and stuff, you're probably not going to have a good opinion about him, because
that's fair.
It's kind of like, what have you done for me type of thing.
Okay.
With cool. him.
So after that Iowa camp, did you have any more contact with Iowa or not really?
I don't think so. The reason I got in is because my, I guess I don't really know what the relation technically is, but he's like an uncle to me, is like right-hand man to to Kirk. And so they helped me out. Lon Olenzak, if
you can. Oh, yeah. It. Yeah, we know Lon.
We know Lon.
Yeah, and Lon and Jason are my dad's cousins, so I don't know what that makes me, but we're related. So that's how it got me in, and that woke me up, you know, to what actual football was, not just shitting on eight-man competition.
Eight-man's a little different. We had a couple of eight-manners on the squad.
Dude, our whole, like, D-line in 2015 was eight-man. Hey,
I mean, it's a fun game.
Nate Meyer,
Drew Ott, Nate Bujeda.
Dude, Nate Meyer was the same. I'm pretty sure he's the same class as me. And ended up not having to play against him. He was
fortunate.
Insane. I just remember him running for like 500 yards and 10 touchdowns a game in high school. Like,
here's that's a funny play. Nate Meyer story for you.
10 touchdowns and 560 yards in one game.
That's insane.
Cliff, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
All right, so we were at the Tax Slayer Bowl, and they had those, you know, those big inflatable balls that you put on and run each other.
Oh, boy.
We were on the beach, yeah. And Nate and I we both wanted to do it. And I was like, sure, I'll do it against Nate. I mean, we're in a big-ass ball. He messed me up bad. He smashed me into oblivion.
All I know, Drake, balls. Is you said, after that happened, you said, I was convinced that those things were – impossible to get hurt in, and I just got hurt.
I'm sure it did.
Also, I've a story from that day. Kevin had a couple nice shots with the Jaguars cheerleaders from that day at the beach.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. We were playing we were playing bags with them on the beach. Yeah.
Did you grab some butt, Kevin?
No, I did not, because I respect young ladies, Greg.
That's a good answer.
Three of us.
I've only seen from the outside of Nate, you know, like the image of Nate Meyer. I've never actually met him.
And he wasn't Nate wasn't like, he's smaller than you. He wasn't physically.
Yeah, he's got a smaller frame, you know. But
he was.
I know he's a country boy, right?
When you talk about a
just
motor.
A wild man.
When you talk about a motor, he's got the biggest motor on the lake. He fucking. Want to take a quick second to let you guys know that this podcast is officially sponsored by Manscaped. Yes, we've had a lot of you reach out over the last few weeks now that we have the Manscaped deal. We also, I mean, I personally was at a family gathering, and there was a bunch of good response to the Manscaped deal there. They love the ads talking about, you know, balls and whatnot. Drake, you've got a fair amount of facial hair going on over there. And,
yeah, man. I am actually out of state, have not been back home to be able to use my Manscaped. That's why I'm looking terrible. I wish I did have my lawnmower 3.0 because I would look like less of a homeless heroin addict and a little bit more like a respectable young man. But I'll tell you what, even though I don't have my lawnmower 3.0, I actually sold one in person. I let this fine young lady know just how much smoother her man's balls would feel if she would if she were to just use the code walk on at checkout.
And exactly. Dude. And it's an easy sell, right? It's just the easiest sell. Kevin, you really liked the old Zeke's haircut in your pants thing from last ad.
I thought that was pretty funny. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and our partners at Manscaped, they came up with that one. You don't want to look like that. Like Drake said, code WALKON, WALKON at checkout. You get 20% and free shipping. It's the best men's grooming kit and tool on the market. Why wouldn't you? Also, they have an incredible pair of boxers, like performance boxers that feel.
I'll tell you what, man. The crop preserver is a game changer.
Is it game changer? It smells so good, huh?
It does. It does. I love it.
I told myself when we started this podcast we would never advertise for something that we didn't believe in. And that's a lie. But with this product, with this product, it is something that I actually believe in. It's incredible. Kevin and I and Drake have all had conversations about this thing off air, off mic, of us all being like, holy shit, this thing is actually insane. So you guys know what it is. Code WALKON at checkout, manscaped.com. Free shipping and 20% off. Now back to the show.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify, one of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline, wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app. Search for Wash Up Walk-Ons on Spotify or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Wash Up Walk-Ons.
Yeah, but anyway, going back, eventually I got to go on the official visit and they invited me and whatnot. And Farley offered me a partial scholarship and I just remember I was talking to Iowa Western at the time and they were like throwing the kitchen sink at me. They're like, what do you want? Like, cause I told them I was at the official visit and I told them they offered me and I accepted it right away. Cause it was kind of a dream school because it was 20 minutes away from me. And Iowa Western's like, what do you want? We'll give you anything. Yeah. Like all this stuff. And I'm like, sorry, I just committed. And so that's how I ended up there. And yeah, then the rest is history.
You, so you came into UNI in 2013?
2012.
So you're a year older than us.
Yep. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So it took what, 2-3 years to start seeing some serious playing time at UNI and then?
Yes. Seriously, my redshirt freshman year, like I said, I was star on the punt shield. I mean, that's pretty much most of what I did.
And then, you were taking helmets in the chin then.
Oh God, dude, it was terrible. And I had such a bad badge of honor about it too. I was like, I was so like proud of it.
They hype you up. Yeah. That's, it's like your one job.
I was so naive to think they obviously just wanted me to take a bullet for the team.
Yeah, dude. And a bullet you were taking is absolutely for real.
Yeah. I mean, the bullets were like 275 pounds.
Dude,
we had one guy, remember Jake Hewlett had his face mask literally bent in by some dude from
Indiana.
Yeah.
If most.
How would they still let the punch shield happen?
I was just gonna say it's the most dangerous position. It's worse. It's worse than the kickoff wedge. It really is.
No, it's close.
That's
because like yes. when you hit the wedge, you decelerate a little bit before you do it. You don't just do it at 20 miles an hour.
Well, we have seen people do it at full speed.
Amani Jones.
Have you seen Amani Jones play?
Yeah, football? That's the most kickoff assassin that's ever lived, besides maybe Bob Sanders.
Those two are up there, though. Both of those positions are just, I mean,
but you've when it's a defensive tackle that's pissed off that they just went three and out, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, I've been there. I've been there hitting the shield, being like, well, I have nothing else to do. Let me go fucking smash this guy.
Smash.
Exactly.
And so, luckily, I played so, like, I don't know if it was in practice, but I was the middle shield. That's the worst one. You don't want to be the middle. The side is better, okay? You at least are only getting hit from one side, hopefully. And so, I played terrible at the middle shield on purpose so I could purposely get on, like, left or right. I knew I couldn't get off of it. And so the story goes, then my redshirt freshman year, we go to Hawaii. We played Hawaii. And they had these big Samoan D linemen running at the shield. And our starting D linemen. Okay, so this is a story like about Farley. Like personnel-wise, like I don't know why there was a starting D lineman on the shield. He's like – it was Ike Alice, Drake. And so he got a concussion. Like,
oh, God.
From the first, like, quarter – because one of these Simone guys comes and smashes into the shield.
And you got thrown in.
And he didn't come out of the game now. He played through it.
Oh, okay.
That's the you and I way.
That's respected. The Isaac Alice way.
Yeah, yeah.
That is
yeah,
one of the much. Toughest human beings.
He's, you watch him on tape, and he's, like, stumbling around. We're like, Ike, are you okay? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. But, yeah. And then basically my redshirt sophomore year – I started playing a little bit rotationally at in D-line, still on the punch shield, just holding it down and rotationally getting in on the D-line. And then we had a couple injuries here and there, like I think week three or four. And it was North Dakota State week.
How live is the Fargo Dome?
Dude, it's insane. It's the craziest place I've ever been. I mean.
Crazier than Kinnick.
Yeah, I mean they're it closed, probably. I just think
it
like,
probably is because
just because it's enclosed.
And because it's like their place, they hype it up. And like when you and I came to Iowa, that was never like.
Yeah, I mean it's not a huge rivalry game,
right? It was never going to be like the hypest day or.
It almost seems like life or death when you go to North Dakota State, like
right, especially like, for those two teams because you guys were battling back and forth.
I'm going to say, like, outdoors, I'd say it's more impressive that Kinnick can stay that loud and whatnot. But, like, Fargo is, like, it's a square. Like, it almost seems like all the sound is bouncing off each other. If we're, like, literally yelling at each other from a foot away at its loudest, Fargo is, like, you can't hear. So
really?
And their fans are just – I think they're more hostile than Iowa fans.
They like, they have some
I've been,
pretty some
heard
pretty
some obscenities from though. Like grandmas yelling at me, like, and they're like right behind us.
That sounds like us going into Ames.
Yeah, I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, did you guys get the golden carpet welcome mat when you rolled into Ames? Because like Drake just said, we had the grandmas giving us the double fisters, and you know, the 5 year olds like giving us the fingers, like. What was your guys' welcome to Ames? Like, we had the student section cheering, fuck the Hawkeyes.
No, I think I think there is a rivalry, but, like, we don't get that.
They don't.
At least.
It's because they don't want to admit it.
They don't. They want to think they're superior to you.
Right.
You guys
so they're like,
beat
oh,
them on the scoreboard.
It's below us to act like that towards you and I, even
exactly.
though we routinely beat you. But for you guys, it's different because – they're always chasing your guy, you know, chasing Iowa, and so.
But. It's tough place to be. I mean.
But yeah, and so like my sophomore year, we're going into North Dakota State. I'm gonna be the first D end in, so the third D end, because I think one of our D ends just got back. First play, very very first play on defense, he hurts his ankle, and I go in. So I play the rest of the game, and that's when we beat North Dakota State, like. we beat them to knock their 33-game winning streak or whatever.
Damn.
And so that was my first one, and then I started the rest of the year, and then I never went back. I started every game of the rest of my career. So I actually, in that game, got to – I sacked Carson Wentz a couple of times, so that was –
That's live.
My claim to fame.
That's so sick.
At the time.
So sophomore year, you start. So then you basically start half of sophomore year, all of junior year, all of senior year.
Yeah. Yep. I didn't go back from there. So.
And then coming out your senior year, what was the plan to you wanted to make the league, or what was your expectation going into the draft? What did you think of the NFL?
I definitely wanted to and thought that I was going to. That was the plan for sure. After my junior year, obviously I've had this dream since I was a kid. I mean, most kids do, right? And I've always, it's cliche because it's happens to everybody, but when I would say that to anyone, obviously they're gonna laugh at you and say, yeah, good luck, blah, blah, blah. And so I never really told anybody, but I knew it within my head that I wanted to do it and that I wanted to pursue it. And so it never really became palpable and visible to me until my junior year, when I broke out and I led our conference in sacks and blah, 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 all these accolades and stuff. And so I was on the radar at that point. And so I said, oh, well, I know I'm going to kill my senior year. So I think it's possible. It just really was depending on whether I was going to get drafted or not. And so that was the plan. I mean, I wish I would have got drafted, but I think like we were talking about earlier, the draft is a whole different story, but measurables and all these different things go into it. And so I think the thing that hurt me was just, they can say my competition level was lower and, my pro day testables weren't insane Myles Garrett, because I'm not Myles Garrett, but that's basically what happened.
There's very few Myles Garretts out there.
There are.
Yeah, there's a we have a saying on here that's heart don't have stars.
Yeah, and, I would agree. So
I think you probably fit the bill on that one.
I do. The thing they always would call me they would call me a tweener and a tryhard, and that
wow.
Nice, thanks.
Wow. For the guy that's going out guy, there.
Very high football IQ guy.
Yeah.
Coach's
yeah.
son.
Yeah.
Grinder. We all know the words.
You know it.
White. White.
Yes. Pretty much.
Super white. Poor lateral mobility, Josie Jewell. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, lacks funny. Less than desired athletic ability.
Yeah.
Trying to make it sound nice, but it's not.
But so I'm sure you're getting a couple calls, this and that. Hey, if you don't get drafted, we'd love to have you here. Hey, this and that. So you end up in Cleveland, huh?
It was a hectic process, to be honest with you. I mean, that whole, honestly, going back to my senior year, just picking an agent was crazy. Like I said, I'm from a small town. No one around me had ever experienced this. So I was kind of by myself. I had to reach out to different people to get advice, and picking my agent was a whole thing. And I kind of wish I went with a different one now that I look back, but we go through the draft process, and I've been getting calls the last couple months about maybe going in the 5th, 6th, or 7th, somewhere in there. And I was like, all right, I mean, I'm fine with whatever. And so the closer we get, the less calls I get, and moving it back to maybe 6th or 7th. And so the day of the draft, nobody knows what's going on. My agent is I need somebody to talk to and who knows this. And that would be my agent, right? He's had 20 years in the experience in the business. And so he goes completely dead silent the day of the draft. I'm like, all right, don't know anything. I don't know what's going to happen. And so, day 3 obviously is my day. So we get to about to the end of the draft. I said, okay, I might get drafted here by, and we knew several teams who were interested in me, the Browns were one. I kind of forget now that it's this long ago what the other teams were, but there were some the Vikings, teams that were 4-3 oriented, because that's the kind of DN that I was going to be. And so the draft ends, still haven't heard from him. And then all of a sudden, legit 4 minutes after the draft, I get a call from him and said, he says, "Hey, you're going to Cleveland." I was like, "Okay." And he didn't give me any more than that. I got a call from Cleveland's personnel and they like told me, you know, congratulations and this and that. We'll get in touch after everything kind of calms down today. But literally my agent called me, said I was with Cleveland, and that's basically it. Like maybe 10 more seconds of small talk, but I didn't get a choice. Like there was no, "Hey, you can pick this team, this team, or this team." Like I don't know if I really just got fucked over because I was.
dude, that is wild. And from what I know, this agent guy, he can fucking kick rocks, as Drake would say. I don't know who this guy is, but
apparently there are like agents out there like will try to steer guys to certain teams because of prior relationships or something with that with a team, and it's like
he fed me. You guys,
you're good.
Right? You're good.
Gotcha. I mean, like, I have a couple ideas, but I don't know. Like, he told me a couple things. Like, this is why you're going. Like, hey, I think it's your best chance to make it. You didn't get as much money going to this place, but you're gonna have a higher chance of making it. And I'm like, okay. You know, obviously, not having done this process before, I had not a lot of room to argue with him because he's been in the business for many years and I have no idea what I'm talking about. So I kind of just went with it. And, you know, looking back, obviously I can say I wish that didn't happen, but yeah, I kind of thought that it would be like, if you were like playing Madden or NCAA 14 and like, what school do you want to go to? I figured it would be like that, where you're like, which team do you want to go to? There's three or four teams that want to sign you to the undrafted as an undrafted free agent, but that is not. So
damn,
I ended up in Cleveland.
That's wild. And then you spent two camps with them, Drake said, and then I know you were with two other teams as well.
Yeah, actually, after – so Cleveland was the year that they went 0-16, which was fantastic, by the way.
Oh, fuck them.
This was great. I mean, from management down, couldn't have been a worse franchise.
Incredible.
And so – the only thing about that year is, I'm sure you guys, I don't know if you watched, I think it was last year's Hard Knocks, the defensive coordinator, Greg Williams. He's the bounty gay guy.
Yeah.
He was our defensive coordinator. And I mean, the dude is as close to as insane as you can be. And
that's incredible.
Honestly, it was a great time. But yeah, that was my experience. My very first camp was Greg Williams fucking screaming at people right away. So yeah. And then, so after Cleveland, I got released and I spent, this is another thing with the same agent. Like I had a good preseason, like Drake had mentioned. I had, you know, I only played really one of the games and I had ended up having like six tackles, four sacks and two tackles for loss in that preseason. And I got cut. I didn't get a workout from anybody. Didn't get on practice squad, then nothing, didn't hear anything. You know, I kept getting false promises from this agent saying, "Hey, I talked to this team this week and you're on their list to work out." That happened religiously for 16 weeks of the season. And I couldn't have been more upset at this guy. And so the season's over, still not on the team, whatever. And so the next year I go to this thing called the Spring League. It's a showcase. It's kind of bigger now. I don't know if you've heard of it, but Austin, Texas, the year that I went, it was $700 out of my pocket, which I wasn't making any money really to go there. So I had my agent. I'm like, "Listen, you're paying for this." So I did. I went down and I killed it. I mean, it was 2 weeks of practices and two games in front of scouts. And I mean, I was pretty much just shredding people up. And I had been talking to Carolina, and so Carolina ended up saying, "Hey, we'll get you we'll give you a tryout." So, but before that, I killed the two games, and I contact my agent. I'm like, "Hey, like the games were televised on like Bleacher Report or something easy to watch." And I'm like, "Hey, did you see like my game?" And both weeks I asked him, and he didn't watch either of them. I'm like, "All right, well, you did." So I fired him that day.
Nice.
And got a new agent and then got a tryout with the Panthers. And then off that tryout, I got signed with the Panthers all the way through OTAs and training camp with them. And then got released after preseason with the Panthers. Went a full year again without being on a team. And then I forget. I mean, obviously, I ended up with the Vikings. I got a tryout with the Vikings as well. And, Jesus. I don't know how I forgot this, but I played Jesus, in the AAF, obviously.
Jesus got you the tryout with the Vikings?
I was like, I don't remember how I got on the Vikings.
But yeah, tell us about that.
After Carolina. Okay. So after Carolina, I spent this – it was the same kind of thing. Like, I didn't get any workouts or anything. So by December came, my agent had been talking with the AAF and this new league and blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, you know, it sounds pretty promising. Sounds like it's going to be pretty easy money to me. Like, it's, you sign a 3-year contract for $250,000, you get $70,000 the first year, $80,000 the next year, and third year is $100,000. Like, it's pretty good for your season is from January to April. I'm like, that's much better than the NFL's schedule, and there's no off-season activities. I'm like, I could do that, no problem. So, for some reason, none of the teams would sign me, and then camp started January 1st or 2nd. And I got signed to the Salt Lake City team like December 27th or something. So I was like, you know, just signed, went out training camp. And then, yeah, the whole season with the AAF was, it was
an insane. Absolute disaster.
It was at the, it absolutely was. So not for me personally, but in terms of the outside looking in, it's an absolute mess. But I couldn't have enjoyed my experience more. I mean, making the amount of money that I did in 2 or 3 months for at least on my team, like camp practices were so easy. Practices were easy. And then, well, I mean, the games were great.
It was just a quick bag. I mean, it was,
it really was. And I have nothing to complain about. Like compared to other training camps, like in college and professionally, like in the NFL, like training camp was super easy. The coaches were just super laid back. It was like, yeah. And so, and luckily I had success in the AAF that it made me feel like what it would feel like to have, to be like a star in the NFL. I totally understand what it would be like. I mean, for 2 months, I was like the king of Salt Lake City because
I led the, I love it.
I led the league in sacks and legitimately, I mean, people were treating me like I was some type of star. So that, I really loved it. I honestly wish it didn't go bankrupt. I would probably have, I might have turned down the Vikings to stay.
Really?
he was gonna big chilling, dude, making like 100K a year.
Eating free food in all of Salt Lake because
King of Salt Lake City, just traveling the incredible country out there. Like,
talk about it. And then you're done in April and you get the rest of the year off.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Easy. Dude, the XFL, man. I'm about to, when it comes back and The Rock gets it going, I'm throwing my hat in. I'm going to.
I can't believe it. Honestly, I thought the XFL was doing relatively well. Obviously the whole COVID thing.
I think without COVID, it succeeds.
I thought it would. Like, I didn't see a reason why it wouldn't. I thought it was ran much better than the AAF. I don't know if you've heard any of the stories of the AAF. It couldn't have been ran worse.
Weren't guys like not getting paid for like 2 or 3 weeks or something like that? Like,
yeah. Like,
did you have to start selling like autographed footballs for money or?
And did you maybe not send those footballs?
Yeah. I mean, I can't talk about that. So no.
Anyway.
I mean, they made it seem like everything was under control. They did a lot of like propaganda, like, hey, everything's all right. You know, that's just, you know, this is why this happened. Like payroll the first week was like 2 days late because they had to switch payroll lenders or something.
Unreal. But
you look back at it and they actually didn't have any money. They were waiting. They were waiting on money from their like investor or something. Wow. So
it's hilarious.
That wasn't being told to us. I kind of was like, there's, again, I was like, I have like a glasses half full type of mentality. So I'm like, you know, like, these guys are dealing with millions of dollars. There's no way they could grossly.
Did Did you get did you get the bag? Like, did you get it all?
We got paid all the way up until the week that I went bankrupt. So technically, I made, like, I was supposed to make $70,000 from that first year, but I only made what eight games was. So I think it was like 56 or 60 or something. But the amount of work that I put in, in the amount of time, like
the ROI was incredible.
It was. It really was. So I have no complaints about it.
So then you end up with the Vikings, and you spend. Was it the same year then that later that summer and fall is that you were with the Vikings?
Yeah. So actually, before I had a try with the Panthers, I had a try with the Vikings, and I killed it, but they didn't have any time or space on their roster. So I was familiar with their coaches already. Their coaches knew me a little bit. And so then after I was doing so well in the AAF, they noticed me. And so the general manager, Rick Spielman, actually flew out to Salt Lake City for one of the our last game in Salt Lake City where we played like Arizona or something. I had, you know, he came out to watch me. And so I didn't really know that, but coaches kind of told me that afterwards. And so that's when they bankrupt the league or whatever. That's when I heard, I mean, literally got news in a team meeting in the hotel, get an ESPN update on my phone saying AAF suspends operations. And we're just like, coach, what is this? And like, they didn't know. Nobody knew. So we just found out about it, like by our phones, and they confirm it. Then practice is canceled. Then pretty much all within like a couple hours, it's all like everything came crashing down. So I'm talking to my agent at the same time. And they're like, now we're pushing for the NFL. Now we're, you know, marketing me to NFL teams. I had like the Patriots, the Vikings. I had multiple teams that really, you know, wanted me to come and sign with them. But the thing that made the most sense to me was the Vikings. And so then I signed with the Vikings. It was a crazy event. I mean, guys, I had was getting married mid-season in the AAF. So I had worked it out with my GM of Salt Lake that I was going to fly home.
Well, because you were the king of Salt Lake, so you probably could make these decisions.
Could make these things happen. And my GM there was like, he was really nice and he loved me. And so I was like, hey, I need to go home. I'm getting married Friday, like April 6th. We have a game in Atlanta Sunday. I said, I'll fly to Atlanta, play the game, and whatever, you know, like we'll figure it out from there. And my wife was going to fly to Atlanta with me and I was going to play. And everything, but that week is when it went bankrupt. So I got signed to the Vikings. They wanted me to come out and do a physical so they could sign me. But I had my weddings on like Friday. I'm like, hey, like I want to sign with you guys. Can I get married first though? So they let me get married. So I got married. Then I went up to Minnesota, got a physical, and I signed.
Your wife is pissed.
And I couldn't say enough about how awesome she is with how she handled it. I mean, they're preparing, setting up for the wedding, and I'm still in Salt Lake. I fly home. They want me to come to Minnesota. They're pushing super hard for me to come to Minnesota to sign. I'm like, listen, guys, I'm about to get married. Like, just I will sign. Just give me like a week or something. And so, unfortunately for me, I signed, and then the off-season program started like next week. And my wife had to go on her honeymoon without me. So,
ooh,
not unfortunate for her, unfortunate for me, to be honest. We booked a big one, a big honeymoon to Italy and for 2 weeks. And she took her aunt, and I got left behind. And so still stings. It still stings.
Oh, man. Wait, at least you didn't like take some other dude.
That's true. That is true. I'm happy that wasn't the case.
Oh man.
But that whole spring was insane with the AAF. Looking back at it, it was crazy. And so yeah, then that led me to the Vikings. And so I was with them from OTAs all the way through training camp, and kind of the same thing happened. I mean, they were super talented roster on their defensive line. So you know, it was hard to crack. I thought it did really well, and they ended up, well, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with business decisions. Like, it sounds kind of dumb because I'm 26 now and I was 25 at the time, but like 25 is somewhat old in the NFL.
I was going to say this was last year, right? 2018.
Yeah. So, you know, there's me and this other guy. We're probably competing for the spot on either the last spot on the roster for the defensive end or practice squad. And it ended up being practice squad. And they took a guy that was younger than me. He's 22, I think, and I'm 25. And I outplayed him in preseason the entire time. But they ended up pretty much exactly what they told me. Said he's younger, he can develop on the practice squad. And it told me all these amazing things that I did in camp and all these other teams want me and stuff like that.
So it's like a girlfriend breaking up with you.
It really is.
Oh, you're great, and all these other girls are going to want you, but yeah. You're just not.
It's not you. It's me. It's us. Like, all right, man, just kill me. Like, just tell me that I'm – just tell me to leave because I will.
What was the final straw that made you say, screw it, I'm going to go teach kids speed and agility in Waukee, Iowa?
I think the thing is the NFL lost its glitz and glamour for me.
Okay.
For the last year or
so. You saw the ugly underbelly of it.
For sure. And, you know, like, I can't stress enough that I loved my time in the NFL. You know, I feel I fulfilled my dream as a kid. I got to play in stadiums that I only dreamed of playing in as a kid. And I've watched on TV. And I've played against Hall of Famers like Joe Thomas and future Hall of Famers. You know, I've played against all those guys. And it was great, but the entire time of my 3 years, I was constantly stressed about, like, job security. I was constantly stressed about, you know, how I felt about myself in terms of a player, and just super stressed the entire time. Missing out on a ton of family events, you know, like weddings. I was supposed to be in multiple weddings, couldn't go to.
Honeymoon.
Basically never open. Well, August from December, almost. So.
Right.
Eventually, I just kind of like stopped seeing it as a dream. I think probably a year, two or three, I go into camp and it's a job. It was a job to me. It was like, you know, like if I wasn't getting paid, there's no way I would do this. And you hear guys say that all the time. They're like, if they didn't pay me, I'd still play. And that's a lie. Because why would you do that? And so then I kind of just was like, I don't want to keep missing out on like how many more years can I do this? Where I just kind of bouncing back and forth. But I told myself coming out of college, if I wasn't established on the team by 3 years, that I'd be fine with leaving. And so that's kind of what happened. And I knew that this is what I wanted to do afterwards. I wanted to coach and train. It's what I went to college for. So I knew that this was, I saw an opportunity in Waukee to
great
do
place.
It. Yeah.
It's, and the key it's the key to good living.
Right. And so, you know, it was the right time. And so I'm actually very happily was able to hang it up and move on with both with good feelings about it, you know, not just negative feelings about not ever making it. But I think being able to teach and give back now with what I've learned and the people who helped me on my way is what I wanted to do. And so, yeah, it was just time. I didn't want to continue to chase the freaking bubble roster spot every year and continue to miss out on family events and yeah. Stuff like that. And
it's a lot of anxiety and stuff that is unnecessary. It's glad that you got closure on it, though, because a lot of people, I feel like, probably don't. So explain your role now before we – I don't want to take up too much of your time going for an hour here, but your role now at – D1 Sports in Waukee, Iowa. What are you?
Yeah,
I know what you are.
My official title is the director of football operations. I'm also just a strength and speed specialist and whatnot. But basically, what we do is offer football specific training and classes and camps. At our facility, D1. And so my title is kind of a fancy title, but because I'm not really facilitating a ton because I'm the guy actually doing it. And so we have, you know, individual private training, we have camps, clinics, all that going on in kind of just started, obviously, with COVID wrecking my plans for the whole year.
Yeah.
But I've honestly been able to do pretty well with the whole COVID thing. So, you know, I'm training all the way from kids who don't even know how to throw a football all the way to, you know, I've worked with a couple former Hawkeyes who are in the league. And so they were here in D1 for their off season. So I work with pretty much everybody, and that's, so that's my title, and that's basically what I do here.
Yeah. I saw Ease and Ross Reynolds were up working with you at Grinding. So yeah, that's pretty cool.
I honestly can't believe Easley is not on the team.
I think he'll find a spot. He'll be somewhere. He's got too much sneaky athleticism and football IQ. Yeah.
He's got too high motor and
coach's kid.
He'll find a way. Anything else for Carter, guys, before we let him go?
Nah, man, that was a cool story. It's cool to hear you and I's take from the other side of the ropes, man.
Yeah. It was good to be on.
We're glad that – I mean, I'm not sure why how you're friends with Drake, because that's a really hard thing to do and be. But, I mean, it provided us a nice little contact here. So, thanks, Drake, setting this up.
I don't know how many times you guys told me I'm not good for shit, but I clearly
– Well, and to be honest, for those that are still listening at the end here, it's good to have you back, because there was a hiatus. There was a small two-week hiatus, and
back at it like a crack addict.
Yeah, the talent on the podcast is back. We'll just say that. Episode 142 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Carter, thanks again for joining us on this fine Sunday afternoon. That's it. We'll be back again on Thursday, hopefully with – we're probably going to complain about how people are playing football and the Hawks aren't. So that'll be Thursday. Thanks for listening.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.